chairman calls, then he'd be detained for a few more minutes, so. Well, now, do you want to have some further discussion on section two, on prostitution itself? I don't know of any states that have repealed prostitution statutes or books. Even Connecticut, which is probably has gone as far as any of the states in the area of sexual offenses, still retains a not only a prostitution section, but also a section on patronizing and permitting and promoting prostitution. And they have a section on allowing a court to order examination for venereal disease.
No, actually, New York went farther than any other state in its, by its penalty provision, making it a violation, so that it's punishable by a maximum 15 days.
I think we're going to have to look at an approach like that because it's a matter of pure politics. Chance we're going to get the commission to go for an appeal or kind of legislature.
Oh, I wouldn't even really consider supporting repeal. It just creates too many other problems.
I think that's right.
I do too.
It's asking for a lot of trouble. I don't, if I really was convinced that repeal would do some good, I'd say fine, but I don't see how you can win no matter what you do.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
That's true.
Just here, and it's going to be here, and it's going to be abused, and there's going to be problems forever with it. Unless we do away with one of the sexes, which I certainly would not support.
Well, did we pass on number one?
Section one?
No.
No, the your definitions, no, those haven't been adopted yet.
Well, on section two, Roger, this...
We tentatively approved section two, but there was no vote taken on it.
This does not include, I mean, I'm just reading the way it reads, it doesn't include the patronizing male, does it?
No, we decided that it wouldn't because that conduct wouldn't be in return for a fee. In other words, the fee would only be flowing one direction.
One direction. You want to move on this, or you want to wait till Wally gets back, or?
That's surprising. I move on. Not surprising.
Well, if there's no further discussion on two, we could go ahead and move to section four, and then vote on them all. We should have three people here. Okay, you want to go ahead, Roger, with section
four? Yeah, that's on page 22. Now, this section is titled Promoting Prostitution. Now we're not talking about either the prostitute or the patron themselves, but we're talking about the people that profit from prostitution. A person commits the crime of promoting prostitution if he knowingly, one, owns, controls, manages, supervises, or otherwise maintains a place of prostitution or a prostitution enterprise. Now, both those terms are defined in section one. A place of prostitution means any place where prostitution is practiced. Prostitution enterprise means an arrangement whereby two or more prostitutes are organized to conduct prostitution activities. In other words, a place of prostitution is directed at a situs situation where prostitution is practiced, where prostitution enterprise is aimed at the call girl or string runner type of activity. Subsection 2 induces or causes a person to engage in prostitution or to remain in a place of prostitution. 3 receives or agrees to receive money or other property other than as a prostitute being compensated for personally rendered prostitution services, pursuant to an agreement or understanding that such money or other property is derived from a prostitution activity. or four, engages in any conduct with the intent to institute, aid, or facilitate an act or enterprise of prostitution. Now, all of these subsections are really a restatement in one form or another of the existing law in Oregon on prostitution.
Roger. They are number one. Is there a present criminal statute on it? I just keep thinking that up there I've seen them use this public nuisance, filing lawsuits that way to abate the...
Well, for example, 167.105 is keeping a body house. Any person who keeps or sets up or permits to be kept or set up in a house of ill fame, brothel, or body house for the purpose of prostitution, etc., shall be punished. $500 fine, 30 days in jail. Sub 2, 167.125 is procuring a female to engage in prostitution, which is a felony. There are some others. 167.240, visiting or inducing others to visit houses of prostitution. Subsection 3, would be 167.120, living with, receiving earnings of, or soliciting for a prostitute. Sub 4, covered by 167.130, transporting female for prostitution purposes. Or 167.125, procuring female to engage in prostitution.
It would be... Would this, if we enacted Section 4, is it intended to replace 465.110? It is,
No.
Well, no, it wouldn't. You've got it listed as existing law, but that's the abatement.
Yeah, that's civil procedure for abatement. That's
so
a
nuisance. We'd retain that,
yeah,
wouldn't we?
Yeah, we wouldn't want to repeal that,
no.
I don't think. Because it has some advantages that your criminal prosecution doesn't have, obviously. You can
shut it down,
maybe
still have the contempt.
Put them out of business through that procedure. Plus,
burden of proof.
Your burden is a little less. Well, is there any...
What about this? Or remain in a place of prostitution? Any ways that could be taken wrong?
Well, this is aimed at the, I think it's traditionally called the madam. Well, I don't know, I think now it's just as often these type of enterprises are operated by men who set up. I don't think they use the term body house anymore. Set up houses of prostitution and induce women to remain there. I suppose primarily not by coercion, because we have another statute coming up on compelling prostitution. Primarily, I suppose, just on the promises of a good income and police protection and a steady supply of customers.
Now, on page 25, the criminal statutes are set out, the existing statutes.
There was quite a bit of disparity, you know, between the penalties.
Well, we increased it last session on the
put a mandatory minimum on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the Grace Peck bill. So.
How many times has anyone been prosecuted in the last, let's say, 10 years, $10,000 fine? Or just any fine? I wonder.
Well, there really aren't very many cases.
As far as cases that have gone up on appeal, none. Not only in the last 10 years, in the last 100 years.
This, again, is a situation that you've described where prosecution is usually by the city, under city ordinance.
Right.
State just lets the city regulate the problem. The gals are usually fined, and the fine is usually paid by someone, and they're back on the streets within 48 hours.
Well, I would anticipate when we come to grading that this would be graded a little more severely than the prostitution itself. I would hope we would not retain a mandatory minimum.
Well, I don't know whether this type of activity just isn't much of a problem in Portland, or whether it isn't, the police make no real aggressive efforts to gain conviction, but there aren't many arrests made for this type of conduct. There are more arrests made for prostitutes. And that could be because there really, perhaps in Portland, there isn't really much organized prostitution enterprises. Perhaps most of the prostitutes in Portland are working generally on their own, or
well, they have a guy,
working
but
with
not
a man who takes care of them,
yeah.
Takes most of their money, keeps them supplied with narcotics.
Well, and of course you'll run into the situation, you'll run into the call girl situation where you'll have a number of them come into a place like Portland. But the guy that controls and operates their and directs their activities doesn't come with them.
Uh-huh.
He'll stay in San Francisco or someplace, and they'll come in and they'll have it all set up in advance. But, so whether or not we'd even be able to get to that guy or not anyway under this is questionable. But
the studies have shown while there's a certain amount of mobility among prostitutes that they will move from one area to another, particularly when there's a lot of police pressure on them, that it's not a problem of organized crime. The organized crime in the United States is not very much interested in prostitution for a couple of reasons. One is it apparently just isn't profitable enough, and two, questions of organization and discipline. They're hard people to organize and keep in line.
Okay, any further discussion on Section 4? All right, then Section 5 on page 33, permitting prostitution. This apparently is directed at the landlord.
Yeah, the landlord, lessee, lessor. Person commits the crime of permitting prostitution if he knowingly permits prostitution in any premises under his possession or control, or fails to make reasonable efforts to abate such activity. Now we have a statute. What is that now? 167.105.
There's a difference here that I think caused the problem with respect to the comparison of the model penal code. Notice that a person who knowingly promotes, the word promotes is in there, prostitution. Mm-hmm. This raises a problem that we've dealt with in the Inchoate Crimes article, where the retailer, who is in the normal business of selling sugar, sells sugar to people he knows are making illegal whiskey. This is the example usually given. And you have to be very careful draft the criminal statute not to impose criminal sanctions in what is legitimate commercial activity. And this may be impinging on that because it all he has to do is know there are prostitutes in his building. I think you ought to require the promotes idea.
Well, of course, the model penal code has both in there, Gordon.
Well, yeah, but it does have that word promotes, which I think this is a difficult problem even if you try to limit it with promotes.
Yeah, but I mean,
you still
they,
have to decide
they,
what that is.
Well, I didn't include this as one of the types of conduct prohibited under the promoting section because I thought it would be great. It's conduct of less serious proportions. Because usually in these, or at least the intent here is usually in these cases, the owner or the lessor or lessee perhaps is not directly profiting from the activity.
See, the Model Penal Code says the following acts shall, without limitation of the foregoing, constitute promoting, and then they set out leasing or otherwise permitting a place controlled by the actor alone or an association to be regularly used for prostitution or the promotion of prostitution. So I don't think that it's limited to promoting.
As a matter of fact, isn't the intent of that type of statute to be able to prosecute the individual that you cannot actually prove was promoting it, but that you can prove leased the premises and perhaps subleased them or something? Because we do have a civil statute that if you rent your house out, normally you may say, okay, what they do there, it's their business. And the civil remedy of going in and invading against the lessor. I don't know the way this is worded. I thought it was kind of to pick up the slack where you can't really prove the guy was getting a piece of the action, but you can sure tie him in pretty close to it. Or is it really meant to just get at the...
No, it's...
To get at the lessor situation.
Yeah, it's really directed at... It's a type of a nuisance statute, someone who allows this to continue unabated with knowledge of what's going on.
California approach, section 1804 that's cited in the draft, was a subsection under a section called abetting prostitution. And one of the ways to commit the crime of abetting was to knowingly permit prostitution in any premises under his possession or control, or fails to make reasonable effort to halt or abate such use. Well, that language is very similar to what you have. You think this goes too far afield, George?
Well...
because we require knowledge, he has to knowingly permit prostitution. I mean, if he was merely the landlord or the lessor, and you couldn't show that he knew what was taking place, well, you couldn't convict him under this. Wouldn't think.
No, that's true.
All we're really saying is if you lease your premises and you know it's being utilized for an illegal purpose, we're going to put the burden on you not to allow your property to be utilized.
Well, then, wouldn't that also apply to the storekeeper who sells materials that are completely legal to sell, but which he knows are going to be used for criminal purposes? Wouldn't this also make him guilty? And I know that the subcommittee studying the conspiracy comes in here, obviously, is what we're talking about, the conspiracy of the landlord with the prostitutes, or the conspiracy of the storekeeper with the illegal whiskey, or the use of the gun to rob the bank, or whatever it may be. That goes too far, I think, to say simply that he knows.
Well, there seems to be a difference
there.
The
illegal use.
Once having sold the goods, he's given up possession or control over their use after that. But we're talking about a man here who still can exercise control if he chooses to. Because in Chapter 464, there is under the abatement procedure, there is a statute that he can cancel any lease. Mm-hmm. It's voidable.
Well, there is. It isn't exactly the same. I suppose I'm just raising the problem because it might be a conspiracy problem. It could be prosecutable under conspiracy as well as under this particular section that we're talking about.
Now, Carl probably has a point there. This could probably be used in cases where the person exercising control of possession actually has been profiting from the enterprise.
But well, there's no problem there.
The
I don't
state
think,
perhaps
this
wouldn't
would
be able to prove
of
that.
Evidence of a purpose to promote the business. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be an agreement to do it, but obviously if he's taking more money for the sugar or more money for the guns than he's entitled to, it's probably his purpose to promote the illegal activity, and this, you can infer it, and I think the cases have, the cited cases have, in fact, found the conspiracy on those grounds. But that's what disturbs me a little bit. If we've got the fellow who's renting his property without getting a piece of the action, that would be the kind of the exception, wouldn't it, I would guess?
Well, yeah,
so an innocent landlord, if he knows prostitution is going on and isn't in on the take, is he really the kind of person that you want to reach in the criminal law?
Well, he isn't the kind of person you'd probably reach anyway, because he'd usually be getting a piece of the action. If he knowingly permitted it, he'd be getting a...
That's what I would assume. He'd be getting more rent than
rent.
As a practical matter, then it might not be a problem with respect to this particular kind of criminal activity.
No, it seems, of course, it certainly could happen, I realize that, but it would be highly unlikely, I would think, for a landlord to know that prostitution's going on. He's got a house he rents for $200 a month, normally, and he rents it for $200 a month to a pack of prostitutes, and he knows that this is what they're doing.
Actually, we're talking about the fellow that owns the rundown hotel, aren't we? Where this is where girls utilize most, the old beat up hotel. They just rent a room. And
yeah, they do in downtown Portland. There are a number of hotels that are used for them, but also in the suburban areas and the better areas of Portland, and they use duplexes. But I have no knowledge of whether they pay a going rate for rent or whether they pay a great deal more.
That was quite, that kind of alarms me when you talk about the hotel.
What would the owner, even if he knew about the prostitution in his hotel, knew about it to escape criminality?
In fact, that case you mentioned, and just about every case you can find that goes up on appeal, you'll find that after the solicitation, they walk down the street and go check into a hotel for $5. Now, those type of hotels, I think that's their main trade.
They know, and
then they know
that prostitution is going on.
But since they don't perhaps charge an unreasonable rate, they couldn't perhaps be ever charged with promoting prostitution, in other words, living off the earnings of prostitution. But they could be charged under this section.
Let's say you have this is kind of off the track. You have a hotel situation like that. How about the manager of the hotel? I mean, how far down do you carry? Is it, we say, any premises under his possession or control? What I'm thinking about, we changed the law last session on the projectionist who runs the obscene film movie theater. No longer is he going to be prosecuted. Yeah, we've taken him out of the prosecution section, saying unless he had some authority in the selection of the film or own part of the action there.
He has to look at him, that's penalty enough.
Yeah. He's fine else. But I just wondered about that same type of problem existing in a statute like this. So the assistant manager there is in charge of the hotel that day. People come in and they register, and the owner says, we're in business to rent these rooms. He rents in the rooms. Maybe I'm just.
Well, wouldn't your hotel manager have control of the premises?
Yeah, that's
so.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he might and probably would have a lot more control than the owner.
But I think Harl was thinking that in some cases, perhaps if he's new on the job or that sort of thing. While he had control, he might not necessarily have knowledge.
All right, then he wouldn't violate the section.
It goes to me further than that. I just think about it. A person works for someone, and I don't think this is too unanalogous to the projection situation. Working there, you're making $85, $95 a week as an assistant manager in one of these rundown hotels. Your whole job is just to sign him in and give him the key, and that's what they tell you to do. And you do it, and they come in and they arrest you for this permitting prostitution. I just wonder if that's the guy we want to reach.
No, I don't think.
I don't think we're
that kind of guy is the guy we want to reach. No,
no, he's a pawn.
The fellow you want to reach is the one who's enjoying the profits of the prostitution. And you don't want to cast too large a net to catch some of these people who might be innocent landlords. I don't think there'd be many of them like you, Don.
And we have the civil abatement statute that can be utilized.
Well, actually, my experience, at least in Portland, with places I was aware of, particularly in Northeast Portland, not the Albina district, that used primarily duplexes, I don't think the landlord in a lot of those cases does have knowledge.
You still have those addresses, right?
Hmm?
You still have those addresses. You speak with such expertise.
No, I don't, but of course I know people that do.
Actually, this statute, as drafted, is narrower than 167.105, because here we require a person to have control or possession of the premises. Mm-hmm. 167.105 says any person who, the language, permits to be kept or set up. Under that, you could permit such a thing without having possession or control.
Yeah.
Chief of police, yeah, and violate that section.
Wouldn't there be any objection to the language? It might be a little awkward right at the moment. If he knowingly permits with the purpose to promote, that phrase, I think this would bring it in line with the inchoate crimes section on conspiracy, and I don't see it would hurt anything. Because with the purpose to promote even makes more specific the mens rea of the particular owner. Now that certainly can be presumed from the tacit taking of a large amount of rent for the premises above and beyond what would be normal, or of course the actual participation by the owner. And I think it would, I'd feel better with respect to the innocent landlord who may know about prostitution, but still I presume could be innocent of promoting or having the purpose to promote prostitution on the premises.
Well, if you do that, then I think that subsection 3 of section 4 would cover the same kind of situation, wouldn't it? Because there you have,
mm-hmm,
receives or agrees to receive money pursuant to an agreement or understanding that such money or other property is derived from a prostitution activity. I mean, that certainly show an intent to promote.
Clearly. Yeah.
Well, how does this vary from subsection 1 of section 4? Actually, if you own the place where prostitution is practiced, mm-hmm, or if you control it, or if you manage it,
actually, there isn't a great deal of difference.
Mm-hmm.
Except that, you could.
It's really the same, isn't it?
Now, number 1 of section 4 is model penal code language, owning, controlling, managing, supervising.
Well, you probably, I'd be inclined to agree with what George says on this. I would think section 4, you could get at any. I mean, the guy that's bad enough actor that you want to charge him, you could take him under 4 as well as 5, couldn't you?
Yeah, I should think of it, just my first impression, that if you're going to, I don't see why you'd need subsection 1 of 4 either way. And it seemed to me that if you are going to change the requirements of mens rea, make them more strict than 5, that you'd have to make it more strict than 4, and it seems repetitious anyhow.
Yeah, in 5 we were trying to get at the less or lessee situation, where in 4.1 we didn't think it would reach that.
Mm-hmm. So you had in mind the madam.
Right. In other words, the question is, would a lessor be covered under sub 1 of 4? Having leased the premises, would he have any control or management or supervision?
Well, he would own
the
it.
Premises. He would still own it.
And you still have the requirement of knowing. Well, of course, he knowingly owns
a place of prostitution. The question is, does he knowingly own a place of prostitution? He owns a building that he knows is being used for prostitution.
Of course, that's the definition.
Yeah.
Any place where prostitution is practiced.
Kind of a play on words.
Well, what if you put in there, after prostitution, a person commits the crime of promoting prostitution if with the intent to promote prostitution? Mm-hmm. Or
yeah, well, I think it ought, if you're going to have the policy in 5, you ought to have the same policy in sub 1 of 4. They're landlords, and just a different kind of ownership. Sense. Of course, one owns the whole fee and the other one is a lessor. It would seem to me that to be consistent, you ought to have the phrase, if you're going to add it all, in both places.
Well, of course, if you put it in both places, then you don't need 5 at all.
I don't think so. I don't think you need 5.
You can delete 5 and just, if you put, then after if, with the intent to promote prostitution, he knowingly.
And if his intent isn't to promote, and if he isn't deriving any profit, perhaps he shouldn't be.
Because a person could knowingly own a place of prostitution and not be any more culpable than the kind of guy you're trying to get at with Section 5.
Right.
I don't think there'd be any problem with proof in separating out the people, and I think you might have a tendency
to catch the
poor dumb landlord who knows what's going on but doesn't think it's any of his business.
And you got the civil rights.
No, I don't.
Still go in and force him to.
Would someone like to move?
Yeah, you can still close him down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll move the amendment to Section 4.
With the intent.
A person commits the crime of promoting prostitution if, the amendment being, with the intent to promote prostitution, he knowingly.
Well, actually, I like that addition because it solves one of the problems that I saw that might come under sub 4. And that's the taxi cab driver who a fare gets in and asks him to go to. You've got two situations. One, the fare asks him, can you get me a prostitute? And he gets one for him. Well, that you could say that's clearly punishable. What if the man says, take me to 222 Broad Street? The taxi driver knows this is a house of prostitution. But you know, he takes it and charge him regular fare. I wondered if that would be covered by 4, because is there an intent there to aid or facilitate an act? Well, I didn't feel it should be in that situation. But as long as we have with the intent to promote the prostitution, then it would clearly not be.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. And you clearly don't want to get that cab driver.
Are those the guys that know the addresses here?
I don't know how common that is in Portland, but in Chicago, Illinois, for example, is it Victory Cabs or Veterans Cabs? I forget.
You'll have to speak from your experience. Oh. I have.
That was many years ago. Anyway, they specialized in that. The whole company.
It's overwhelmed. Your expertise in this area. You just
rattle. I always take
rattle.
My wife when I go
Names.
To Chicago, Roger.
Hmm?
I always take my wife and children when I go to Chicago. Keep me out of trouble.
Of course, the cab driver who's getting a kickback is you're going to be able to give to him.
He's
going to
be receiving money.
Right. Well.
Well, that's consistent then all the way through with keeping the criminal sanctions out of legitimate commercial activity. And when I use the word legitimate, I put parentheses around it or something that indicate there's a line that's a very fine line that you don't want to cross really in with criminal law.
Okay, in then would you like to also move that we delete Section 5?
Yeah, I'll move.
All right, now that means we have two motions on the table, but maybe we ought to just leave them there and have lunch and then
come
by
back
that time Wally ought to be back.
I'm still a little concerned about, even though we delete 5, Section 4, and I guess it's just because of this problem we had over the obscene movies, where there's a quote, a mere employee, end of quote, of the hotel, who's there and who registers people and gives them the key and takes the $5 for their room, and who may be night manager as such, and under Section 4.1, if we're going to be catching that individual, and if we want to, I wouldn't think that he's the... Well, I can visualize where he'd be the individual you'd want to catch.
Yeah, but I wonder how many of those night managers are, you know, all that innocent about what's going on in their hotel, too.
No, I think, I mean, I'm conceding that he's sitting there and he's an employee and he makes $100 a week. And owner says, rent the rooms. And I said, fine. And the gals come in and he's not naive. He understands what's going on. And he rents the rooms pursuant to his contract of employment. Just like the projection certainly was naive and showing the obscene film. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's no problem, but...
Well, I think that with your more clarification of the mens rea element that you just inserted, I don't think he has a thing to worry about.
To promote prostitution.
Okay.
I think you're probably right.
I think you can sift these people out.
He's just renting a room and...
I mean,
he got some kind of a rake off or something. He'd fall within the area.
Yeah, if that's all the cops have on him, nobody's going to fuss with him anyway. You know.
The only thing, you know, on that wing wall, on the projectionist thing, they did arrest the projectionist on that thing up there in Portland. They arrested everybody.
They usually do.
Yeah, when we read that statute. God, they could have gotten the ushers, the popcorn girl, you know, with the G. You know, and they're the pretty tough, but they went in.
Well, it's precisely the problem with this kind of section.
Can raise, yeah. It's got to be broad enough to give them some latitude to get the people they want to get, and hopefully you have a district attorney that'll exercise discretion.
Well, of course, another very effective means you have of controlling the hotel, rooming house situation. Well, not so much a rooming house, but certainly a hotel. Any place has to be licensed by the city. I mean, that's pretty effective means of controlling that.
That's true.
If you're having a lot of difficulty, you just don't renew the man's license.
Although, Ruth Barnett, remember that... She owned the motel up there, and they've never established that it was anything but a legitimate operation. And but she was convicted after the last conviction for abortion. While it was on appeal, her license on the motel came up again, and they just told her no license. It really didn't have anything to do really too much. At least the papers didn't report it had too much to do with the operation. They just didn't want her to license her for it. Okay, well, shall we go to lunch?
What I might tell you what the motions are. We've had two motions.
We haven't voted.
And we haven't voted yet. There was a motion to amend Section 4. So in the first paragraph, after the word if, we would insert the words with the intent to promote prostitution.
Oh.
So that we would tighten up the culpability requirement.
We can start now for the record. Representative Haas has finally shown up.
I just came from a caucus.
And And a companion motion to that was to delete Section 5.
Yeah.
All of Section 5?
Mm-hmm. Because the feeling was pretty generally that Section 4 would get...
With that amendment, would take it down.
Feeling.
I see.
And we didn't want to make it so broad that we would encompass the innocent landlord, or the innocent nightclub hotel.
Okay.
If there is such a thing as an innocent night clerk, I don't know.
Naive. Maybe a better word.
So that would bring us in, Mr. Chairman, to Section 6.
All right.
Section 6, compelling prostitution. Person commits a crime of compelling prostitution if he knowingly uses force or intimidation to compel another to engage in prostitution, or causes or aids a person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution, or causes or aids his wife, child, or stepchild to engage in prostitution. And these are, in effect, all aggravated forms of promoting prostitution, and the object being to this would be graded a more severe crime.
I have a question.
Carl?
I don't think it's a problem, but do we have any problem at all with what we mean by aiding?
Well, is this the crime of rape, too? And what about the, this is, isn't it? Forcing someone to have sexual intercourse without her consent? So you'd be in complicity. You obviously wouldn't be guilty yourself of the rape because you forced someone else into sexual intercourse without her consent. And what about the person who is the consumer here? He has no consent in this case. I don't know. It just struck me as being right offhand as being a little perhaps overlapping into the area.
You're talking about sub one.
Sub one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, two questions.
Well, of course, the intent of sub one isn't really directed at a specific sexual act as it is a course of conduct. In other words, what we mean is uses force or intimidation to compel another to engage in a prostitution activity. Now, this is fairly common from what I've read that men will force through threats women to remain in prostitution activity, mainly by threats of physical harm. Or another threat would be particularly prostitutes who are addicted to narcotics, a threat of cutting off their supply.
I could see what George's point is, that right down the line, I think the fact situation is substantially different, of course,
mm-hmm.
kind of, from the standpoint of you touched it. The fellow, the customer, consumer, is not committing, to his knowledge, is not committing the act of rape. Has no intent. The only thing that would make it rape is that the girl's consent is...
But you can commit rape recklessly. It's a general intent crime. For instance, if you have intercourse with a female who is below mental intellect and can't give consent because she has no capacity, you can be guilty of rape,
mm-hmm.
even though you don't know that she has a capacity to give consent.
Well, you're saying it's possible for a patron to commit rape on a woman who's engaging in
this
prostitution
act? Well,
that's
kind of far out. I think it's possible. It's a little farther out. I suppose what I'm raising is this a perky situation?
Well, I don't...
Where we're allowing the district attorney to pick and choose between the crime of compelling prostitution or rape. I don't know. It strikes me as a possibility of overlapping crimes here.
Well,
Well, it's kind of far out objection. Maybe I should do it.
In order, say, for the, looking at the standpoint of the patron here, in order for him, say he's patronizing a prostitute, and to his knowledge, I mean, she's doing this because she wants to.
And she charges and receives
payment. Yeah, in reality, she has been forced to engage in prostitution against her will. Well, in order for the person who has compelled her to engage in prostitution to be guilty of rape, you'd have to have a principal to the crime who would be the patronizer. He'd have to be the principal in order for the one who has compelled her to be an accomplice of the one who
actually... You'd have to have the act, obviously.
Yeah, you'd have to have the act, but you'd have to have some force employed on the part of the person who engaged in the intercourse with her before you could bring in this promoter over here and make him guilty of the crime of rape. He couldn't be guilty on his own account of rape, except as an accomplice to an act by someone who actually engaged in the act. So wouldn't you have that element missing? You wouldn't have an element
of... Well, she's consented without consent, though, really.
Yeah,
I mean, she's not really consenting to the intercourse.
Yeah,
she's being raped, in short. It's just a question of who's performing the act.
Or who's compelling the act to be done. Because the active participant in the act wouldn't necessarily... be the guilty party. What do you have? Remember in law school the case where the husband forced his wife upon threat of death to have sexual intercourse with party A, and she did, and the husband was subsequently convicted of rape.
We still have that.
Yeah. But there, you see, subject A knowingly participated in this.
Yeah.
He was. That's true. I don't know of any other case. I don't know of any cases that would go as far as what I'm suggesting.
See, in this case, the husband was guilty. Husband B was guilty because A was guilty, and that's how they got the husband. That was my point. In this situation, I don't know. I don't think you'd have a principal guilty party in order to bring in an accomplice, would you? Because I don't think the element, except for statutory rape, if you're talking about stat rape, she's under 16. Well, if she's under 16, it'd be stat rape anyway.
Regardless of what happens, right?
Roger, in regard to the word intimidation, would that... we do intend for that to cover the situation where the woman would be an addict, and, or are we even thinking in terms of that? She would be an addict, and this would be a threat and withdrawal to source the drugs. If those facts could be...
This section is based primarily upon the California section, and they use the language force, threat, or duress.
But we would feel it under the facts that if the district attorney proved the act of prostitution and proved that she testified she did it because she was an addict and he had supplied her and he threatened to withdraw the source. That's why she did it, but that would be enough to bring him under Section 6 of 1.
I would think so. If the jury believed that, if she was acting under that threat. I would assume that just about any prosecution you get under number 1 is going to have to be on the direct testimony of the prostitute. But there would certainly have to be other evidence.
When we speak of prostitution, Roger, are we... One act constitutes, and this brings it closer. You partially answered George's comment by saying that, or maybe it was you, Roger, saying you're thinking about a whole series, because it was your comment, a career, so to speak, prostitution as opposed to one act of intercourse.
Yeah, well, the Oregon Supreme Court had earlier interpreted our vagrancy statute where it refers to a common prostitute.
That's the Perry case or whatever it is. I don't.
Yeah, but prior to. Perry case, they said that you would have to show an indiscriminate, a continuing series of acts.
Yeah, but
and now they say one act of prostitution.
Is that
sufficient?
Is that the definition we're using? Because I read that case and I don't somewhat tortured to get the answer that they came up with.
That's how it would be, yeah, that's how it's used here. I mean, if a pimp used force or intimidation to compel a woman to engage in one act of prostitution, okay. It'd be...
How about two? Harl asked a question about what is AIDS a person? What are we thinking about there?
Well, for example, placing her in a house of prostitution or...
How about
transporting her from one place or another?
Okay.
Intrastate as opposed to interstate.
How about aiding her by giving her the $20 and having intercourse with her?
Good point.
Yeah, you have a point there. And the problem there is, of course, we haven't defined prostitution. While we define prostitute, we haven't defined prostitution on the assumption that you don't have to. Prostitution is any activity involving a prostitute. Let's see, causes or aid to person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution. I suppose you could say a person by paying a 17-year-old prostitute is aiding a person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution. That isn't the intent of this section, though. I recall an earlier statute, we put language in the section to distinguish that, other than as a prostitute being compensated for personally rendered prostitution services. Make it clear we weren't talking about that act.
Think out loud for me. What we talked about this morning about moving the age limit up with the 3-year defense. A person then 22 years old who had sexual intercourse with a female 17 and paid her for it. We wouldn't have any perky problem, would we? It would be the added element.
You've got a different element there, yeah.
But he'd fall within both.
Right.
Yeah, he could.
Mm-hmm. Fall within both crimes.
But, of course, even if you didn't have the added element, if they're both misdemeanors, there isn't going to be a perky problem anyway. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have one that's a felony and one's a misdemeanor. Before you get into a perky situation.
Well, is the thinking of this statute, this position here, would be a misdemeanor?
No. My thinking would be that it would be a felony.
I think so. It's force and intimidation. Right.
For example, the present
Oregon... would be a felony.
Still might have a disparity.
The present Oregon statute
serious
on...
serious felony involved in the class.
167-135 is our present statute on procuring a female under 18 for prostitution. That has a 10-year maximum, and placing your wife in a house of prostitution has a 10-year maximum. And our present statute on coercing a female to engage in prostitution has a 5-year maximum. So that all of the areas covered in this section are present felonies.
Let me jump to 3. Isn't 3 the same as... Why do we single 3 out? Because it's an existing statute?
Existing statute, and it's throughout the United States that's consistently been considered a graver offense, a grave offense in the area of prostitution.
Well, are these going to be graded 1, 2, and 3? This will be the same level of felony for all 3 of these.
Whatever the penalty attaches to this section would apply to all 3 subsections. I mean, you wouldn't distinguish the penalty between the subsections.
What if the child, what I'm getting at is, suppose the child is, if the child or stepchild is, if it's their infancy for which we have great concern, then they would fit under 2.
Yes.
If they're adult, then I wonder why we single out and say, well, if you're related, closely related by blood or by law, then that's, I mean, I don't know why we single out the wife, child, and stepchild.
Well, I suppose on the same premise that in other sexual offenses, on consensual sexual conduct between adults, you have a crime of incest.
I know, but... I mean,
well, also now, there's certainly precedent for this in existing law with respect to a rape of a daughter or stepdaughter.
But there we say, that's so reprehensible that we'll add the penalty. We're not here. We're not making this any different than if you cause a stranger. So I agree with you. I can see a difference there. That maybe sending your wife out to be a prostitute is much more severe than encouraging a friend. But we don't treat it as such because we're going to call all the same level of felony.
I think we're treating it pretty severely. We're saying that you can't force anyone to do it, and you can't force a minor under the age of 18 to do it. And we're viewing, regardless of the age of your wife or stepchild, if you cause or aid them to do it, we're viewing it just as seriously as those.
What we're saying is this section, prohibiting force and intimidation to compel anyone to enter prosecution. And then kind of setting out two particular classes, one which is minors, under 18, mm-hmm. and the other which is daughter. Of course, let's say
wife.
Child, stepchild, or wife. Number two, of course, for protection of the young. Number three, it's inimical to family stability. And you're correct on number three, that as far as child or stepchild is concerned, and wife, it would apply regardless of age. And as the child or stepchild, it would apply regardless of sex.
Getting back to this Perkey question, just for the record, there's a case that I cited in this memorandum that I did some time ago on the Perkey case, State versus Harmon was a case where the defendant was indicted for contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and there the act was sexual intercourse with an unmarried female under 18. And then, of course, then you have the companion statute of causing a child to become a dependent child. And the defendant demurred to the indictment. It was sustained in circuit court on the grounds that the statute did not distinguish between dependent and delinquent children. And the Supreme Court reversed circuit court on that. There was a legal distinction between the two, but that wasn't the one I wanted. Here's the one I wanted to cite. There was State versus Gordonier, 229 Oregon 105, a 1961 case. And there was a CTDM case again for giving liquor to a child. And then the question was brought up that there you have a statute which prohibited giving liquor to a child, which was a misdemeanor. And he argued that the DA was granted the power to elect between these two separate statutes, charging for contrib or for giving liquor. And that it was violated Perkey and denied him equal protection of the laws. The court affirmed the conviction, saying that in the case of giving intoxicating liquor, the act of giving alone, regardless of its consequences, constitutes a crime under the statute. When it appears the act is accompanied by circumstances which show that it would tend to cause or did cause a child to become a delinquent child, a different crime is made out. And then there's some interesting language that says, clearly then, the case of Barr is different from State versus Perkey. There the unconstitutional statute made illegal the doing of a certain act under a particular set of circumstances. It then permitted the offense to be treated as a misdemeanor or as a felony in the complete and unqualified discretion of the magistrate or grand jury. Here, however, it is a difference in the kind of circumstances under which an act is done that distinguishes the crime and accounts for their classifications. And there are a number of cases that have, since Perkey, that have been similar to that. Perkey's really on pretty narrow ground. I mean, you've got a single statute for one thing in Perkey. You don't have two separate statutes. You've got one statute which gave the district attorney the discretion or the grand jury discretion under that single statute to either charge him with a felony or a misdemeanor. And there hasn't been one case raised since Perkey that's been affirmed or reversed, depending on whose argument, on the basis of Perkey. Every one, as the court has distinguished, and certainly every one where you have two separate statutes that Perkey has never said that a single act cannot violate more than one statute. But because you certainly have lesser included offenses all the time, you might have one set of circumstances that would violate several statutes. Assault with a dangerous weapon. You have assault and battery. Assault with a dangerous weapon is a indictable misdemeanor, and assault and battery is a straight felony. But you've got a different situation. You've got two circumstances. But anyway, I don't want to beat it to death, but I think it's...
Let me ask this, Raj. Section 4 on promoting prosecution. Subsection 2 induces or causes the person to engage in prostitution. And subsection 2 of 6, causes or aids a person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution. I don't know if one can be a felony anymore, but I just wonder if aren't we covering in subsection 2 of section 6 by section 2 of section 4? What was the question?
You're saying under subsection 2 of section 4, if the person were under 18, they would be covered there?
Yeah.
And they would also be covered under subsection 2 here?
Yeah.
Yeah, conceivably they could be. If the
well, of course, wouldn't that apply to 3?
Because it doesn't distinguish.
Yeah. In other words, 4.2, section 4.2 is anybody. Child, adult.
But of course the object was to single out these particular classes of people and make it a more serious offense.
Would promoting prostitution then be a misdemeanor?
No, it would, assuming, of course I'm not too familiar with what grading structure is going to be, but grade A, B, and C felonies, it would perhaps be a grade C felony, where compelling would be a grade B felony.
Well, for that matter, the whole section 6 could go under that. I mean, if we're...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
The exception would be, and this is the point to which I was addressing myself, that 2 and 3 do come in under this one. 3 comes in under 2. The real one, as by the title, is the compelling mm-hmm. aspect. The causing or aiding, where this becomes more reprehensible is the fact that it deals with a minor. 3 becomes more reprehensible because it deals with a wife or a daughter. But, so the question would be, do we want to make it, really there, the compelling, which is no part of the statute, but nevertheless, compelling only applies to one, where you force them to do it. And the rest of them, the difference between inducing and aiding.
In other words, you're suggesting that 2 and 3 could be taken out and just leave 1?
Well, I wonder what we gain. All right, it's true that we gain, if we're going to say that Section 4 is a Class C felony and Section 6 is a Class B felony, then we can say that these things are worse, under 6 that I'm pointing to, are worse than the one Harl pointed out, Section 4.2, which gets induces or causes. And then in Section 6 we say cause or aid. And there's a difference, I suppose. But I wonder, in the matter of proof, how much, as a practical matter, how much difference there is. And if the answer is, well, one is more serious than the other, fine. But if they're going to both be the same class, then we're just repeating ourselves.
Right.
And that was my argument with 3 and 2 fitting in, or 3 fitting in 2.
I think we ought to. I'm ready to argue it. I think we ought to keep it.
Make it a higher? Are you arguing it ought to be higher or same class?
No, I think it ought to be a more serious felony. I think what we mean by subsection 2 of section 4 induces or causes is we're talking about the procurer of a seemingly adult woman to engage in prostitution and him to set her up and to pay her and that type of inducement mm-hmm. we're thinking primarily of. And we say when he goes beyond, that's a grade C felony. When he goes beyond that and uses force or intimidation, or when she's a minor under 18, or when she's related as a wife, a child, stepchild, he's
up the penalty. We're talking about the same act, but we increase the penalty if it's within this category.
Except that the act would be different on using force or intimidation.
Oh, well, yeah, apart from that, I'm talking about the causing or aiding. Now, do we want the distinction between causing and aiding, or do we want inducing and causing? Is there a we use inducing and causing in one aspect, and now we're causing and aiding mm-hmm. in another. Do we intend that difference? And what, if so, what is the difference?
Aiding worries me, Roger, a little bit.
I see the problem there.
Could we not induces or causes? Wouldn't that...
Rather than aid,
you mean? Yeah. What do you think? So far, everyone's talked about the only difference is the victim, or the one where...
Well, Harold, you can solve your problem on aiding if you just simply put the after the word prostitution in sub 2 with others. That's what you don't want to reach the consumer here.
I don't think that's right.
You don't know.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
With others.
Wouldn't that solve your problem?
I think it would. I was trying to conjure up some an example of that might fall within the term aiding. That might not be conduct that we're really thinking of, but I really can't think of it. Yeah, that would solve it. That would be satisfactory to me.
Engaged in prostitution with another?
With another, I think would be...
You know, way back when we first got into our first draft on sex offenses, you know, we had a section in there which provided for a defense to rape if the... if you could show that the victim was a prostitute. And when you get to a section like this, you can see the value of that kind of a defense, because that, mm-hmm. would get you out of this kind of a problem where you... Wasn't that your main question here, that whether or not you might have a... Well, here, of course, you've got...
That's the gold coin again. I think we put all the lines out of it.
Yeah, I thought we'd kind of
put that to bed for a while.
Kind of. Well, we haven't voted on it yet, but we were kind of voting. Going to vote on it. Somebody's motion. That the person engaging in the act of intercourse with a prostitute. Or not.
We've already voted on that. Well, are we all satisfied with AIDS? Do we know what that means? And are we not?
Well, now, the term aids and abets has been defined a number of times by Oregon case law.
So we're drawing a distinction, and we say that you can abet and it's not a crime, but if you aid, it is a crime.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think aids includes abets.
Oh, okay.
How did they define it anyway?
Well, I was going to get this out. Our section on parties to crime, I cite a number of... Oregon cases on, and that was one of the reasons that we decided in that draft our section on complicity, for example, one of the subsections, aids or abets, such other person in planning or committing crime, etc., etc. And we didn't define the term mainly because we felt it didn't need definition. The terms aids and abets have been utilized without definition as much as they've been interpreted in a number of Oregon cases. State versus Rosser defined an aider and abettor as one who advises, counsels, procures, or encourages another to commit a crime, though not personally present at the time and place of the commission of the offense. State versus Start defined abet as meaning to countenance, assist, give aid, and to include knowledge of the wrongful purpose of the perpetrator and counsel and encouragement in the crime.
Well, I hate to be humdrum on the preciseness, but I think when we're in the same section and we clearly draw a distinction...
You should be consistent, you're saying.
We're saying one's a crime if you induce or cause, mm-hmm. but it's a higher grade if you cause or aid.
Yeah, I believe because we're talking about basically exactly the same thing, that perhaps we should be consistent.
Except you do have a wife, child, or stepchild.
That's depending on who you're causing or aiding.
Well, all right, then do we really mean two distinctions? Do we mean not only the victims, which is what I was saying we were talking about? That's how, if I understand the sense of what most of us approach the matter on, was that we deem these victims are the crime against these victims are stronger or more reprehensible, so we do that. But are we really making a distinction, and I don't think we are, between the act? For instance, if there's a difference between induce and cause, then you can induce your wife to become a prostitute and you have not violated this more serious crime. Right? Wouldn't that be right?
If there's a distinction between induce and cause.
And must there not be a distinction between induce and cause? Because we use the one in one place and one in another. So, or you could induce your child to become a prostitute. Now, if you cause her or you aid her, and I ask you, which would be worse, inducing or aiding? And I say inducing would be a lot worse than aiding.
I think if you'd induced her, you'd caused her.
Okay. Certainly would have aided her.
I think there probably is a distinction in the definition, though. For example, between induce and cause. Cause to bring about and induce, perhaps, to put in motion.
Well, what if we just...
You say you've used the term aids and abets?
We haven't defined it, though. We decided not to
use it
because of the order.
Do you always use it just aids? In other words, you answered me by aids includes abets. Are we on firm ground on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because actually, those case definitions you read is really what we're getting at. And I wonder if it's possible we could use the word aids and abets.
All right, suppose a fact situation where the father, not through force or intimidation as such, but makes it possible or causes, trying to, whatever fact situation is necessary to fit under the word cause, would he also be aiding and abetting? I suspect he would. Maybe not.
Well, by the definition of Don gave us,
counseling, procuring, encouraging, counseling.
Well, then why don't we just cut it down to aids a person of the age of 18 to engage in?
If we're going to do that, why don't we use the terminology aids or abets? Since they've been defined as together, haven't they, Don? Those definitions you gave us were both aids and abets.
Yeah, that term, aids and abets, has been what's been defined. And abets itself has been defined by the court as including aiding, so it's really a redundant type phrase anyway, aids and abets.
Oh. You know, you'd find that, though. That's pretty hairy. counseling or advise. You know, I can see you walking down the street and striking woman and say, gee,
you made a prostitute.
You could go into business as a prostitute and make a lot of money. It'd be very profitable for you.
Now, Webster's defines induce as meaning one to lead on, prevail on, to move by persuasion or influence. Two is obsolete. Three, to bring on or about, effect or cause.
I kind of like that. Well, you got it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the way it is.
I agree.
How about, Wally, would it solve anything by Section 6 by making that consistent, saying induces or causes a person under the age of...
Well, it'd be fine with me. I don't have a hang-up on what particular word, but I think we're drawing two distinctions between Section 6 and Section 4, and I think one we're drawing that we're not prepared to defend.
Yeah, I could... conceivably, you could hang up an appeal court on saying, well, they obviously use different language here. Perhaps they had something different in mind.
Yeah. Well, if we've already got on record saying we certainly have something different in mind as to the victim, and the clear language would indicate we have something different as to the activity toward the victim because we use different words.
Because I think taking the words induces, causes, and aids, or even abets, the four of those, whatever we use, we're going to get about the same result. But perhaps we should be consistent.
I have a motion.
All right, what's your motion?
I'd move that Section 6, Subsection 2 be amended to read induces or causes a person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution with another. And shall I go ahead on 3?
Yeah, go ahead.
And amend subsection 3 of section 6 to read, induces or causes his wife, child, or stepchild to engage in prostitution.
Okay, now this... would your intent be then, Harl, to eliminate the, when we take AIDS out, the transporting intrastate, would that, that would come under cause? Don, would you and Roger agree, and George?
Yeah, I think you're going to have that activity covered.
Okay. Any other comment? Section 6 amended, delete the word, add the word induces or, delete or aids after prostitution, add with another. 3, induces or, and the strike or aids.
Now on subsection 2, was that with others or with another?
I think so, with another.
With another.
With another.
I think from the standpoint we're approaching the word prostitution as one act. Mm-hmm. I think if we added with others, we're back to the old problem again of whether you have to have more than one act. I just assume I'll get into that.
Well, using the term with another, though, don't you have the same problem? Couldn't that apply to the actor, he being the another, but with others?
Well, of course, one cannot commit prostitution by oneself in any circumstance.
You could cause a person under 18 to engage in prostitution with yourself by paying her.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying with others, if with another goes down, so does with others, because what you're other. It'd be with other than the one who's causing the with other than.
How about if we just add another after another person?
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is you always commit the act with another person, and that still leaves the. The guy we're trying to exempt from the person other than the defendant. Have we ever taken that approach?
Oh, heck.
Don, you're copping out on us.
Well, I'm trying to, I don't see the advantage of any of that language in there myself. I don't really see what the problem is without the language with another.
If Wally,
as long as the tape runs.
The Attorney General probably is wisdom using those kind of examples, but if Wally went up to a girl under the age of 18 and paid her $20 and had sexual intercourse with her, he would be in fact inducing or causing a person under the age of 18 to engage in prostitution with him.
So
you
got the patron again.
In
I
think
that's fine.
Well, now we know why. You're right. Yes, I see. All right.
Well,
that brings us back to section 3.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I just. I might go for it here where I wouldn't go for it in section 3. No, it's a little different, really.
Well, sure, it's different.
It's a person under the age of 18.
You got a kid involved.
Will I amend your motion, Harley?
Well, the way it reads with it, I don't know if it makes any difference now.
Perhaps, I hadn't thought of that. You were using knowingly and giving the age of 18. Perhaps if the actor knows the prostitute is under 18.
Maybe he ought to.
Leave it open here for that class of patrons.
Of course, we're getting some other problems here. I hate to bring up, but...
Don't.
I move you don't bring up the other problem.
All those in favor of Don not bringing up the other? No. What are the other problems?
Well, here we're talking about consistency. And here we would make it a more serious crime if the prostitute, or the victim, or how you want to characterize her, turns out to be under 18. Now, with respect to rape, we've allowed a defense of reasonable mistake of age. And we're saying, we'd be saying in effect that since we don't have any such defense applicable to this article, that it's okay to rape them.
But don't pay them.
But don't pay them.
it's
rather inconsistent.
Where if you happen to pay her and she turns out to be under 18, and she might be a lot worse actor in her own right because she is a prostitute than your victim in a statutory rape situation. And this is something we ought to consider or not, but it seems to me we might be able to get to the problem if we could find a substitute for just the use of the noun prostitution. In other words, if we could define this section in such a way that we make it clear that we're not talking about a single act of intercourse, whether she's paid or not, that we're talking about prostitution enterprise, or...
Oh yeah, but then that's your proof. I mean, then aren't you back? You have to compel a person to enter the life. I only did it once, officer. I'm not guilty of the crime of compelling a person to engage in prostitution. Right back on the proof problem.
I know.
I like George's motion.
What, delete the whole section?
No, not let you bring up the problem.
That's enough. That's good enough. We can't have a worse or a better deal to rape somebody.
Now, when I say rape, I mean statutory.
Yeah.
I was going to say that
thing. I'm not talking about forcible rape, but I think the point is still there. That
now, why will this be more severe than, say, statutory rape? Won't. Will it?
Oh, I think so. I'd hope so. Statutory rape, I think of the situations rather some
yeah, but
instances
you have, but in statutory rape, you have a mistake of age, you have the 3-year defense.
Yeah, but I don't think that even compares with using force or intimidation to compel another to engage in prostitution. That's frankly can border on an imprisonment situation. Drugs, physical beatings.
Well, are you white slavery?
Yeah, white slavery.
Well, are you arguing that this should be more severe?
Right.
Than
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it would be, would it not? Because statutory rape in the third degree would be a Class C misdemeanor.
Yeah.
Or a felony. Excuse
Class
me.
C felony.
And we're talking about this being a Class B. This would be down with a guy who has intercourse with a girl under 14, 13-year-old or less.
The only thing is, as Don pointed out, however, when we get to subsection 2 of section 6, it's a little different.
But, well, my point is this, though, that it's not whether or not this is going to be punished more severely, but because the way we've structured our sex offenses article, we're allowing a defense of reasonable mistake of age involving someone under 16 or under 14. The only place where it isn't allowed is if the victim's under 12. But certainly in those two areas, from 12 on up, he could show as an affirmative defense a reasonable mistake of age.
Well, Don,
and I'm saying there you might have a gal who, maybe she looks older, but she might be snow white compared to this gal that's going to be the so-called victim in this charge.
Well, where this breaks down is that in subsection, well, all the way throughout, intentionally, initially, we were not dealing with the person who was having sexual intercourse with a prostitute, but with the ambiguity of subsection 2, then we started dealing with it. And when we try to include the actor in there, we just get fouled up.
Are you saying, Don, if I understand you correctly, that you worry about removing the actor, but just talking about inducing a 15-year-old engage in prostitution, or a 17-year-old? Are you saying that is a, in your judgment, is a more severe or less severe than the statutory rape situation.
Well, I haven't said, and but I think the purpose of the argument that it doesn't matter whether it's more severe or less severe. I think they're undoubtedly they're both going to be felonies of one grade or another, and if that's the case, they're not severe, more severe. One isn't more severe than the other because of the type of penalties you attach to it, but it is in effect more severe because you allow defense to one that you don't allow to the other.
Well, you're saying here that the party that compels a 16-year-old girl to engage in prostitution perhaps should have the defense of reasonable mistake of age to be consistent with the sex.
Well, we're not saying he compelled her. We're saying he
induces or causes. Well, this
girl. Because if he compels her, then you can take him under one or sub one.
Yeah. All right. And that's anybody, regardless of the age. Yeah. Okay. He induces or causes. Then your suggestion.
And we've put him in this section six because this girl turns out to be under 18. Mm-hmm. That's why he's there and being treated more severely than he would over here in one of these other sections.
Well, the only time that works is when the guy fits in, when the actor fits under the statute, under section six. If the actor does not fit under the statute, then, and by that I mean the patron, then this is a totally different.
Well, using the term knowingly in the age 18, would the state in this case have to prove that he knew the girl was less than 18?
I don't think the way it reads into it.
No, I
don't
think you have to.
It's kind of like knowingly selling alcoholic beverages to a minor.
I think the state just have to prove that she was under 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right.
It's like the minor.
I don't think you'd have to prove that the defendant knew it. Do you?
No.
Buyer beware.
Well, if you'd get that result, then we're saying in this section that we're not, in this particular case, we're not giving this defendant a defense of reasonable mistake of age. Is what we're
But I see nothing wrong because there's a total difference. Unless you include the actor, there's a substantial difference between partaking, having sexual intercourse, and going out and arranging and inducing somebody else.
Well,
or you think perhaps
it's being treated more severely though, and we're looking at it as a graver offense because of the age of the girl, isn't it? I mean, isn't that the only reason that this is under six and instead of four?
Correct.
I mean, that's my point, that the only reason this guy's going to fall under Section 6 instead of 4 is because this girl turns out to be under 18.
Well, I think what Mr. Chairman was saying is perhaps in this area the actor should proceed with more caution and he shouldn't have that defensive aid.
Well, I think, Don, if we're going to have something like Subsection 2 and it's going to include the patron, then I would think that we should have it back under the other section. What section was it that way? Where we at least temporarily ruled the patron out.
I would agree.
Don't you think it would, because it seems when you read these three sections that they're all intended at the third party entrepreneur type of individual. That he is procuring his workforce and it's aimed at that rather than the patron. It's awful hard to write them, one of them including a patron and the other one's directed the other direction. Right, what's this from anyway?
Section 6?
Yeah.
Well, the section is based on California, but in effect it restates existing law and order.
And the way Section 2 is now written, does it intend to cover the patron situation?
No, it wasn't my intent to cover the patron.
Now, what's the language, Roger, in 167.135? How does that read?
That's procuring a female under 18 for prostitution purposes. Any person who knowingly persuades, induces, entices, or coerces any female person under the age of 18 years with the purpose or intent to induce or coerce her or that she shall be induced or coerced to engage in prostitution. Knowingly persuades, induces, entices, or coerces under 18 to engage in prostitution.
This one of those areas where we put it in the commentary.
Which is separate, then of course then you have the other one placing the wife in the house. But that carries a 10-year sentence and a $10,000 fine.
I think our problem is that, as Harlow's put it, we're fighting the battle of Section 3 all over again, except now we've chosen weapons that are not intended for it, and we're just going in circles because we're fighting the old battle of the patron, and we already had that out once. It would seem to me that...
Yeah, of course, that wasn't my intent at all when this was drafted. My intent was this was aimed at a third party who, ordinarily for profit...
All right, well then with another...
I don't think that adds anything, I agree.
All right, but...
I'd like to amend the motion to it, don't you think?
Remove the with another?
Yeah.
But
good.
Clearly exclude the patron.
Yeah.
If it has to be in commentary or... Okay. So strike the with another, so the only motion that's facing us now are the induces or in place and striking or aids in section 2 and 3. Let's have a vote on that. All in favor of amending section 6 according to Mr. Haas's motion, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Carried. Okay, now, and the commentary should show that it is the intent of the subcommittee, and we should be reminded to make it.